From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Maverick, the American name that became a legend and the history behind it all. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. From 1957 to 1962, American television viewers could turn to their TV sets and watch a different kind of Western, one that was part comedy, called Maverick.
Who is the tall, dark stranger there? Maverick is the name. Riding the trail to who knows where. Luck is his companion. Gambling is his game. Smooth as a handle on a gun, Maverick is the name. Wild as a wind in Oregon, blowing up a canyon, easier to tame.
Maverick initially starred James Gardner as a gambler rogue from Texas who was as quick with his fist as he was with his wit.
Good afternoon, Mr. Maverick.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bates.
You think you've got me worried with this little maneuver, sitting here whittling, watching the bank?
Well, I hadn't given it much thought.
Do I? Sorry, no. And let me add a little warning. I carry a gun, and I haven't had a real good fight since I got to be a banker. I'm kind of looking forward to whatever you have in mind.
Now, how will a fight get me back my $15,000?
It won't. Got any other way in mind?
I'm working on it.
The TV series and its titular character draw liberal inspiration from an actual figure in Texas history, and it was this real Maverick that caused the eponymous adjective to be coined. Maverick with the lowercase m. Historian Lewis F. Fisher explores that meaning in his book, Maverick, the American name that became a legend. I asked him, what does that lowercase Maverick name mean?
It basically means someone who's a nonconformist, someone who doesn't go along with the crowd, someone who is unbranded and difficult to control.
What is a Maverick capital M? What's that?
Maverick capital M is the surname of a family that gave its name to Maverick lowercase m.
They inspired this idea of independent thinker.
Correct, yes.
Is that well earned?
That is, yes, it is. It is well earned. It is a little more circuitous than that, which is why it takes a book to explain everything.
So, but there is a legend of lazy cattle ranching that some people say is the origin of the Maverick term.
Well, lazy is a matter of conjecture. Sam Maverick, who was a San Antonian and who was the signer of the Texas Declaration of Independence, state senator and so on from San Antonio, got into the cattle business while he was living on Matagorda Peninsula. He left the peninsula to come back to San Antonio and left his cattle in charge of a hand who did not brand the cattle. They got loose and got onto the Texas mainland where the neighboring ranchers would see an unbranded calf and say, oh, that's one of Maverick's. And that's how the name got into the lowercase status. That part is the truth. The myth is, there are several myths about how it happened. Some people said he actually branded every cow that he could find. And there, things go downhill from there.
It was not that unusual at this time in Texas that this is before barbed wire.
Yes.
Had open range.
Correct.
And there were many cattle that were roaming the hills of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the deserts. And I mean, some people had the idea, this is what I get this from reading Frank J. Dobie,
mm-hmm.
that if you were so inspired, you could run out into the monte and find yourself some cattle that were unbranded and brand them and say claim them as yours. But if you did that, you also could be strung up as a cattle rustler.
You could be strung up if someone could prove that they weren't yours. But proving they weren't yours is another matter. And a lot of cowboys could go out, did just that. They went out, got branded some unbranded cattle, got some good herds, and set themselves up on their own ranches.
So how did Samuel Maverick come to be in San Antonio, and why was he in San Antonio?
He had come to San Antonio from South Carolina. He came here in 1835 before the fall of the Alamo. He was looking for adventure, and he was looking to get into the land business. His family had been in the land business and owned plantations in South Carolina, Alabama, and other states, and he wanted to do the same thing here in Texas. San Antonio was the major city in Texas at the time, so he comes into San Antonio in 1835, and all of a sudden he finds himself under house arrest with a Mexican army guard at his door. He had stumbled into the invasion of San Antonio by Santa Anna's brother-in-law, General Koss. He was freed. He led some of the Texans in lifting the siege of San Antonio and became a sort of a military hero because of that.
So Samuel Maverick, one of the founding fathers of Texas?
Pretty much, yes. Yes, he was. He stayed in San Antonio after the siege was lifted. He ended up in the Alamo, but because he was a lawyer, he was elected by the delegation of the Alamo to represent the Alamo at the signing of the Texas Declaration of Independence at Washington on the Brazos. So he left the Alamo. Unbeknownst to him, it was just a couple of days before Santa Anna laid siege to the Alamo, and he went to Washington on the Brazos and became one of the signers of the Texas Declaration.
And Mary Maverick, Mary Ann Adams,
mm-hmm.
Who is she?
She is his wife. He was, after the Alamo, he took a break and went back to settle some family business in South Carolina. On his way back in Alabama, he ran into Mary Maverick. They were riding on horseback, and he met her at he was going one way, she was going the other. They stopped and met, and he fell for her and married her in about 3 months.
I wonder, who is the bigger Maverick, lowercase m, Mary Maverick or Samuel Maverick?
Well, Mary Maverick was a pretty loyal housewife. She did traditional things associated with the family. She was very brave, and Samuel Maverick was more on the outside doing things throughout the Texas frontier, and so probably he would be somewhat more of a maverick than his wife.
But she seems very intellectually curious.
Yes.
Very sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this from her diaries.
Yes.
How important are those diaries?
They are considered to be the first autobiography in the first autobiographical work in the state of Texas or in the Republic of Texas. She was a very careful chronicler of what went on, and in many cases, what she wrote is the only record we have of events that she wrote about.
That's how we know the story about the council house fight.
Yes, that is where we have much of the details on the Council House fight. That is where the a group of Comanches was trying to make peace with the fathers of San Antonio, the leaders of San Antonio. They were locked in the Council House, which was our equivalent of City Hall at the time, down on just off Main Plaza. Things took a bad turn. There were some war whoops, and the Texans, a number of Texans were killed by the Comanches. The Texans fired back. They burst the doors, ran through the streets, and Mary Maverick barely made it. And she was a spectator. She was young. She was looking at what was going on, suddenly realized she better get home, and she closed the door just as one of the Comanches started to come in the house.
The Comanche had kidnapped a lot of young girls, young
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
and had, and the Searchers, we know that from the John Wayne film,
mm-hmm.
that was, you know, the inspiration from the Comanche, their practice.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a negotiation to try to win back or buy back some of these individuals that were taken from settlements in the Texas Hill Country and west of San Antonio.
Correct.
They wanted to have this negotiation. The city fathers of San Antonio deliberately lured in the Comanche at that time and double-crossed them.
I'm not a real authority on these areas of Texas history, but my suspicion is that they were really trying to deal with the Comanches, who were very difficult to deal with, and the Comanches found the Anglo settlers very difficult to deal with. I think it just was one of these things that went bad.
There is a story that you have in your book, Maverick, about the day after the Council House fight, and a grisly tale that is one of the most horrific events probably in San Antonio history. Can you tell it?
Well, I think you're referring to the story of Dr. Weideman, who was a Russian-born doctor who was living in San Antonio at the time. He was very curious about anatomy, and they didn't really consider the Comanches to be terribly wonderful people, so he had no qualms.
They didn't even consider them people. They consider them to be a different species.
Yeah, but he basically felt pretty free to take one of the corpses and to...
We took two, didn't he? A male
yes,
and a female.
Yes, and boiled them in water to get down to the bone so he could study the skeletons. And then he took the vat of leavings, the bones out, and dumped them into the nearest acequia, which was the irrigation ditch, the drainage ditch, that furnished San Antonio's only water supply. It was the only source of water that people in downtown San Antonio had. The next morning, when the residents realized what he had done, that he had polluted their water source, they became irate, and he was hauled before the judge. He sort of laughed about it, took it as a joke. He said, well, no problem. It was all flushed out by fresh water last night, and you can drink your water this morning without any problem.
But there was wide-scale panic, as much as you can say, in the few hundred people that were living in San Antonio at that time.
There surely was.
People were having hysterical fits.
Mm-hmm. They were. Yep.
I think that they had become cannibals somehow. San Antonio's population would flex and flow and sometimes dwindle almost to... You know, the very, very sparse.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. It was up maybe 3,000 at the time the Spaniards were here with the various unpleasantries regarding the Texas Revolution. After the Alamo, the population of San Antonio dwindled to something around 800.
And it wasn't just after the Texas Revolution, after Texas independence, it wasn't like we had this Pax Romana here in San Antonio, this period of peace here in San Antonio or in Texas. We continued to have very aggressive Indian raids and also raids from Mexico. Mm-hmm. And Samuel Maverick participated in this thing called the Runaway of 42. What was that?
That was where the settlers heard that a Mexican force was moving on San Antonio fairly quickly, as Mexican armies had done in the past. And so they hightailed it out of town. They went east toward greater civilization to get out of the way of the of whom they thought was the Mexican soldiers.
So the Mexican soldiers came and they laid siege to San Antonio.
They did, yes.
And they had to take all the records, and they ran with them
mm-hmm.
To what was then...
Washington on the Brazos, the capital.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it was just in panic that mm-hmm. San Antonio was going to be reclaimed by Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And Samuel Maverick and others fled.
Mm-hmm.
But then he ended up being captured by the Mexican forces.
He went back. Another Mexican army came up after he had returned and caught the San Antonians by surprise and marched a number of them off in chains down across the Rio Grande and deep into Mexico to prison.
So Samuel Maverick became a prisoner of Mexico, and then on multiple times he was offered his release. They say, we mm-hmm. will set you free. All you have to do, Samuel Maverick, is renounce that Texas is independent from Mexico and that Mexico has control over Texas. And what did he do?
That's not something he wanted to do. But what he did do was to write a husband of a cousin who happened to be the U.S. minister to Mexico and ask for freedom for all of the Texans. At the same time, his father in South Carolina was doing the same thing. And so the Mexicans began releasing the San Antonians a few at a time. And Samuel Maverick was in the first wave along with the county judge and a couple of others.
As I understand, he refused to offer the
yes.
acknowledgement. He could have been killed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he continued to stand up for Texas independence while in solitary confinement, while in chains in Mexican prison.
Mm-hmm.
And several attempts to free him never succeeded until finally the Mexican government, they couldn't handle this Maverick, and they said, well, we're done with you, and they set him free.
Well, they set him and the others eventually they set free too, yes.
And so he returned back to San Antonio mm-hmm. Carrying the chain from which he had been bound.
And the gourd from which he had been drinking.
So he came back to San Antonio, and how was he seen?
Well, he was seen as a hero, of course, but it was at this time that he realized that his family, which was over in East Texas at the time, it was not safe for them to come back to San Antonio. So he joined them, and that's when they went to Matagorda Peninsula, about as far as they could get from the threat of Mexican armies and Comanches and all the rest. And he got into various activities down on Matagorda Peninsula, including cattle ranching, or including buying a farm with some cattle on it.
This is Texas Matters. We're speaking with Lewis Fisher about Mavericks, a founding family of Texas and the inspiration for those who defy convention. And Samuel Maverick would play a role in the time of Texas Troubles, the mm-hmm. period that led up to secession and the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
He aligned himself with the president of Texas at the time, Sam Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his feeling towards secession?
He was opposed to secession. He had been opposed to secession when he was in South Carolina. He was a lawyer. He set up practice in South Carolina and found that he was out of step with the majority, which is one reason he came to Texas. But he maintained his opposition to states' rights until right at the very end, when it seemed that it was inevitable that Texas was going to secede. And at that time, he became one of a few commissioners designated by San Antonio to receive the arms of the federal garrison that was stationed in San Antonio at the time.
The Twig surrender at the Alamo.
Yes.
So what role did he play in the Confederacy?
He did not play an active role in the Confederacy that I can recall, other than just to be supportive as a San Antonian and to help the welfare of the soldiers as best he could.
But his sons?
He had several sons who were in the Confederate cavalry. One was Sam Maverick Jr., who was with Texas Terry Rangers and had a number of exploits. He was able to swim up under a federal gunboat and explode it or set it on fire, and was quite a distinguished Confederate hero. His younger brother, Louis Antonio Maverick, was also a Confederate cavalry officer.
So after the defeat of the Confederacy, we had Reconstruction. What kind of role did Samuel Maverick play then?
Samuel Maverick died about 5 years after the Civil War ended. He stayed, of course, in San Antonio and was fairly active up to the end, but he just supported the Union. I could add that during the war, he served a second term as mayor of San Antonio also, so he did help in the civil government.
So the Maverick line continued, and we had more Mavericks. There was a renewing of what the term meant as independent thinker.
Yes, it just really had a general meaning of independent thinker at that time. It really took the evolution of the word Maverick for that to come back and be pinned on the Maverick family itself. Once it became apparent that they had, you know, they followed the dots back and said, well, they were Mavericks. There were Mavericks going back into Puritan New England. The first Maverick in America, also named Samuel Maverick, was an Anglican in Puritan Massachusetts. That was not a popular thing to be. He could not hold public office. He couldn't baptize his children in the church, but he stayed the course and remained a Maverick. But it was really the cattle. When the cattle, unbranded cattle, got loose on Matagorda Peninsula and they went onto the mainland, the ranchers could see the cattle and said, well, those are Maverick's cows. But the term really didn't get active until Samuel Maverick moved his cattle from Matagorda Peninsula to a ranch called the Conquista Ranch, which is about 3 miles south of what's now Fall City, 3 miles southwest, where the cattle again were not properly branded and a lot more got out. When he sold the cattle to a neighboring rancher, the neighboring rancher said that all of the unbranded calves and cattle in the area, which had been Mavericks, were his. So he sent his cowboys out across throughout South Texas, about 10 counties, and claimed all of the unbranded cattle as Maverick's cattle. So the word, this is just before the Civil War, the word pretty much spread throughout South Texas that an unbranded cow must be a Maverick. After the Civil War, when you began having the great cattle drives up to Kansas, to the railheads in Kansas, and the cowboys started moving the herds of cattle north, they took with them the idea that an unbranded calf was a Maverick. It got up to Kansas, and pretty soon the word spread throughout the West that unbranded cattle were Mavericks. And that's at that point the word really came into the English language.
But being on TV helps. So
sure does.
We had that period in television history where there was, you turn on primetime, there was nothing but Westerns. And so we had the James Garner program, Maverick. Any ideas about how that came to be?
That came to be because of, actually, they identified with Samuel Maverick. The producers of the Maverick TV show in the 1950s said that their character, Brett Maverick, was independent, just like Sam Maverick, the original Sam Maverick in San Antonio had been. And they carried this idea of the unbranded, unpredictable, irascible cowboy as a Maverick. And the idea of Mavericks had already spread through the Northeast as in the 19th century, when the idea of cowboys and outlaws and Indians were popular, and they began to identify the word Maverick with other elements of the American West. So it was a pretty easy move for the TV show to pick that name up.
Seemed to people really identify with the character, somebody who lived by their wits and their charm and their powers of persuasion, rather than through brutality and, you know, and the gunfights. But there was another Maverick that had a big impact on San Antonio, and that would be Maury Maverick.
Yes.
How was Maury Maverick connected to Samuel Maverick?
Maury Maverick was a grandson of Samuel Maverick. He was a very feisty individual, very liberal and vocal in his thoughts. He ran for public office in San Antonio, and eventually became, in the 1930s, became a congressman from San Antonio. He went to Washington, developed a Maverick bloc in Congress that some people thought was more Rooseveltian than Franklin Roosevelt himself.
So he was a New Dealer.
He was a New Dealer. Yes, he was.
But so he lost his congressional seat to Quinn.
Yes.
Mayor Quinn of San Antonio in 1938.
And Maury Maverick addressed that by running for mayor, which he became mayor of San Antonio. There's one story that one of his opponents was Paul Kilday. And the story is that as he was holding his hand to take the oath of office, as he lowered his hand, he pointed at Kilday, who at that time was the sheriff, and said, "You're fired."
When he was mayor is when Emma Tenayuca had her big communist rally at the municipal auditorium, which turned into a riot and set the auditorium on fire. Many people blamed Maury Maverick for allowing that event to happen. Emma Tenayuca was a labor organizer here in San Antonio, organized the cigar strike and then a pecan sheller strike, and she had a lot of followers. Why did Maverick allow her to have that event at the municipal auditorium?
Well, Maury Maverick had the peculiar idea that this is America and we have freedom of speech. And if someone wants to say something, they should be allowed to say it, even if we don't agree with them. And he was very firm in countering people who told him not to give the permit to the communists to hold a rally in the auditorium, and he gave the permit. And even though there was a riot and that it ultimately cost him his reelection as mayor, he always said that he made the right decision, and he was very glad that he did it.
Some people point to the Mavericks as having been weak on civil rights. Maury Maverick was in favor of the white primary and didn't come out against it.
Well, he was, Maury Maverick was the only Southern congressman who voted in favor of the anti-lynching law that was proposed while he was in Washington. It did not pass. No, I don't think any other Southern congressman voted for it, which is why it was defeated. But he did stay very, very much, he was very active in the civil rights movement.
I think the Maverick brand or unbrand is going to continue to be part of American folklore?
Well, I think it certainly will. It certainly got a good start with the TV show. We have the Maverick car. We have politicians. Since the 1880s in Colorado, there were politicians who were identified as Mavericks, as being unconventional. John McCain ran for president in 1968 as a Maverick. Vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, they were defeated, but there are still other Mavericks. Lindsey Graham ran for the Republican nomination for the Senate or for the presidency last year as a Maverick, and so the name is the word is certainly staying established in the English language.
Yeah, there used to be a Maverick Press around here.
Well, there did.
That was yours.
That was mine, Maverick Publications. There are Maverick brand names throughout
the
world.
But you have a legitimate claim.
Well, sort of. I'm an in-law, so I have a claim in that sense. And there are Mavericks.
So you married into the Maverick line.
I did, yes.
Okay, so how did that help you with this book?
Well, it gave me an inside view. My wife's mother had collected a lot of material on the Maverick families and just put it in a box, and I had some... through the years, people would say something, and I'd kind of make mental notes of the peculiar fact or whatever it was they'd said. So that when I realized that this could be a book, I could draw from that.
And by putting this book together, it's a great book. It seems like, you know, we're crystallizing this idea that for so long has been sort of talked about or whatever, mm-hmm. but now is backfilling behind it.
Yeah, and I think in South Texas, we're kind of used to the word. We take it for granted. And what we don't realize is that the word has gone essentially viral worldwide as a brand name. There are all sorts of Maverick appliances in the United States, but also overseas. There is a Maverick hostel in Siberia, in Irkutsk. You can just follow the hotels. There's a Maverick hotel, Maverick hostel in Budapest, a Maverick hotel on the Black Sea in Bulgaria, a Maverick lodge in Fukushima, Japan, another Maverick hotel in Bangkok, and it just goes on and on. That's one thing that really surprised me as I did research and just simply Googled on the internet how the Maverick name has just spread worldwide and is also used as a brand for many products, which is unusual for a name that is supposed to mean unbranded.
I think that we need to really focus in on that anti-authoritarianism streak of being a Maverick, that you are not just going to fall into step because that's what's expected of you. You're going mm-hmm. to ask questions. You're going to question mm-hmm. authority. And whether that came from Mary Maverick or Samuel Maverick, but it's in the line and it's in a part of America.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Louis Fisher is a San Antonio historian. He's the author of the book Maverick, the American name that became a legend. It's published by Trinity University Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, and you can write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.